Kate Taylor, I'm Principal Investigator of Cilia, and in today's podcast I'm speaking to Lou Brody, who's an applied artist and creative facilitator for National Theatre of Scotland. And in this podcast, I'm hoping to look beyond the go-to stories of LGBTQI plus lives to explore the Elders LGBTI Social Dance Club and look at what happens when these offline spaces move online and the difficulties, particularly for rural LGBT plus people, of social isolation in these times. So I start with asking a little bit about the LGBT plus Elder Social Dance Club and the needs and attraction for it.
The project comes from Australia. It was originated in Australia by an arts company called All the Queen's Men, and it came very much in a direct response to a report that came out in Australia to do with LGBTQI older people essentially going back into the closet as they were engaging with aged care services. So whether that be more sort of healthcare or retirement accommodation, like those kind of things, it was seeing that LGBTI older people were essentially not being out in these environments, either because of perceived bias that they might receive or because of oppression or complications that they had received in those situations. So the project was created in response to that specific, I suppose, report that came out. And then in Scotland, it was, I suppose, picked up by the National Theatre of Scotland because they'd seen the project. And so they wanted to kind of figure out how it might work in the Scottish context. So it's in collaboration with the original Australian team and also with Luminate, who are Scotland's aged care creative body. I suppose they used to be the folks that did a festival, but Anne's now kind of reimagined it as activity across the year. And Luminate had already really started engaging with these conversations. They had been working with older LGBTI people. They'd produced a cabaret in collaboration with Dive. And then they created this film, Return to the Closet, which is very much speaking to those stories that I've talked about, this idea of older people returning to the closet as they start to engage more with different, I suppose, government and health bodies, really. I think in terms of why there's a need for it, is there is a need for these spaces to come together, to feel a sense of community, to spend time with folk that are maybe experiencing similar situations to yourself, and also just to have a kind of joyful time that isn't revolving around alcohol or those kind of spaces that are perhaps seen as the more sort of social spaces in Scotland, but specifically for like LGBT community. It does tend to be sort of pubs and those sort of spaces that you would see as community spaces, I suppose. Although we do, you know, we do have alcohol, we have a bit of Prosecco, we have a bit, you know, there is that there, but there's also the non-alcohol options. And so it's all about creating that social spaces. I suppose we hear a lot from our elders of just wanting those conversations, wanting to have that time together. A couple of our elders talk about the sort of particular loneliness that they experience. And we have a particular elder that we work with in Inverness. So my partner and I run the Inverness hub. So there's a hub in Inverness and there's a hub in Glasgow. And then we've done pop-ups across Scotland. And of course, that's changed in the current context. But we have a particular elder who, he lives in a retirement space just outside of Inverness. So access for him to come into the city to get to other things is really complicated. And he talks about sort of specific loneliness that he experiences. So finding this space for him has access loads of other stuff because of it. We do other things. We go to the cinema together. We've gone to the theatre together. We went to see sort of Ian McKellen as this kind of big group. So it starts to sort of filter into different aspects of your life. And also it means you can have those conversations that maybe you can't have in other spaces. So, you know, like having a sex life at that age is a conversation that we've talked about. And that's definitely something that I think that older folks probably in general feel that they're not allowed to talk about. But specifically, if you have a queer sex life, then that's not something that's invited as a kind of older person to discuss. What does that look like? How can you can have, like, you know, a celebrated sex life at that age as a queer person? So those are the kind of conversations that we might have. But we also might just talk about, you know, the weather and everydayness. So that's kind of where it comes from. And has moved online now, so you can probably see the glitter curtain behind me. That's because we had an online social dance club yesterday, so we sort of put up the backdrop to make it a bit more exciting.
So many interesting things that you've said there, and I was surprised to know that you came from Australia, and I suppose for me it alerted to the kind of problems and potentials of working across country contexts, and what's true for the Celia project working with European partners in particular. One thing that I did want to pick up on there was who counts as an LGBT elder?
It's such a good question. So it's interesting because the word elder in an Australian context has a very specific connotation, comes with a lot of weight, comes specifically from the notion of the Indigenous population and paying respects to that. And it's interesting if you, because we have now been able to experience an Australian online dance club, both the facilitators will tell you the lands that they sit on, where they're coming from, those kind of things, which is of course not a specific context that we have in Scotland, although I suppose in Highland context there maybe is an interesting mashup with the Gaelic traditions, and we do have a little element of Gaelic, and we have a few members of the dance club who are perhaps more West Coast Highlanders who do speak Gaelic and are kind of, you know, queer Gaels, if you want to use that term. So there's maybe something in that. But in terms of like in a practical level, who applies as an elder, we kind of take the sort of LGBT age approach. So really it's anyone sort of 55 over in a kind of like a numbers sense, I suppose, in terms of the stats and the data that we're recording. But when it comes to social dance club, we don't ID anyone. There's no like, you're not required proof of age as you walk in the door. So actually it's a really intergenerational space, and we have people from 20s all the way up to sort of 70s is our oldest at the moment. And it's often a question actually that has maybe been a little bit of a hurdle for us, because I think elder in Scotland is not everybody wants to identify themselves as an elder, even if they are one. I suppose we see it when Amy and I talk about it, my partner, is to just particularly those people who have come through particular historical parts of what has gone on for queer life, especially in Scotland, when you think about the folks that were not just coming of age, but were older during sort of Clause 28, Section 28 stuff. So particularly those are the kinds of people in the stories that really, I suppose, we're looking to engage with. There's a beautiful couple in Blythe who retired in Wick. They're not originally from Scotland, and they've been together since they were 17, and I think they're celebrating like their 50th anniversary. And they're sort of amazing couple because they talk about not really experiencing loads of prejudice, but they have also retired to one of the most remote parts of Scotland. So it's really like a kind of intriguing, those sort of stories. Yeah, but elder is, yeah, it's an interesting, complicated word.
Yes, as is, I think, that the acronym LGBTQI+, endlessly contended and added to. And for me, that shores up the kind of similarities and differences in and amongst between LGBT+ community. Do you think differences in community are more and more acknowledged or perhaps still effaced?
We don't find it so much in social dance club. Yeah. It's not necessarily something that comes up. It's a very mixed space in terms of the different people who identify within that acronym. We have pretty much everyone from that acronym in there in dance club, and it's not, we haven't necessarily seen the separatist politics acknowledged or anything like that. I think I personally notice it within a kind of peer group. I work in the arts a lot. I notice it in that. And I suppose you're going to come to it later, I suppose, with the feminism conversation. But I had noticed the difference seems to be there's a more acute need to categorise yourself or find the borders that suit you or the boundaries that suit you. But it's not something that I have witnessed or experienced with the elders that we spend time with. I don't know if it's just a kind of age thing. So you're just a bit more like, you're a bit more worldly. You're a bit more live and let live, or, you know, they have less of an axe to grind when they're in that kind of community space. They're here for the social aspect of it. So they're not necessarily, whilst we might talk about political conversations, it's not necessarily combative in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
So in that specific context with the older people in those communities that that I sort of work with. I don't really see it in a face-to-face way, but it is something that I see and experience in an arts context as an arts practitioner in a more kind of online world.
Yeah, and that was certainly something that Celia as a project was navigating during the fieldwork around the Gender Recognition Act in particular. But I think you've also pointed to the ways that the political shifts have happened across time, and some of these struggles are not new to LGBT plus communities. In that sense, do you think that things are getting better? Do you think there is a difference between now and then in LGBT lives, however we measure the now and the then?
I don't really know how to answer that question. I think, yes, things are getting better because I think that we can create these spaces. These spaces are celebrated, they're joyful, they're looked for. You can find them in the mainstream. You can find them with, you know, National Theatre Scotland's major arts organisation, the leading, you know, you would say the leading arts organisation in Scotland. And they are actively seeking to make these spaces to engage with these communities. So in that sense, in terms of visibility, yes, I think so. But I also think visibility comes with really interesting, complex conversations, because does visibility make life better for you or not better for you? For our elders, it's a really complex thing because, you know, they want to go about and live their lives and they want to be respected in the choices that they make. But being more visible can be really complex for them, or they feel unsafe if they're more visible. But for some of them, they really want to be visible. They really want to be present. They want to be having these conversations. And I noticed that they really enjoy the sort of intergenerational aspect of the project as well, whether that be the creative team, because the creative team are all sort of 30s, 40s, or whether it be the other folks that are coming along to Dance Club, either as volunteers or just to take part because they don't want to go to the pub. They want a different kind of space. I don't think I have a concrete answer. I think it yes and no.
Absolutely. I'll go along with that for sure. One of the things that we mentioned before, and I think it's worth returning to, is in terms of the less that are visible, feminism in the project. I would say it's a feminist project. It uses feminist theories and methodologies. I regularly out myself as a feminist. Do you think the word feminism still resonates in the LGBT plus community?
It's not something that comes up with our elders. I say it because I identify it as that, and it's received really well. But I don't know if anybody like is actively and consciously aware of the sort of pedagogies at play, especially in a project like Social Dance Club and the Coming Back Out Ball. For me, it's absolutely working on those sort of queer feminist pedagogies. I see it. It's the way that we set up the space. It's absolutely about collaboration, community, all those things that really come from sort of feminist activism. For me, it's about consciousness raising, all those things. So I think it's there, but whether it's there in a really front and centre, like conscious way, I'm not sure. But I don't know if it's a word that people would react negatively to in the spaces that I'm navigating. But maybe that's because I've created a slight bubble for myself.
Well, we sometimes all need to do that. And I think maybe that brings me to the next question around social bubbles, perhaps. So, I mean, now the research is kind of grappling with doing fieldwork or not in the context of a global pandemic. And I've certainly had some thoughts on what that means for LGBTQI plus communities. What about yourself? Tell me about some of the problems or strategies that your group is using.
So we've taken Dance Club online, as I think probably lots of projects have, and that has been lovely in loads of ways because it has meant that they've become sort of international. So we can now join the Australian dance clubs, albeit at 7 a.m. in the morning, which is sometimes lovely. And they can join us. But also we've seen it sort of spread slightly across Britain as well. We've had notes of interest from Wales and from different parts of England. So in that sense, the online space sort of opens the project up to a different kind of people. But it also closes the project down to some of our elders that we've been working with for months because they don't engage with the internet, either because they're just not interested. It's not a space that they are excited about. They see it as a poor substitute, or because they just are really uncomfortable with the technology. So as a sort of team, we've tried to make ourselves as accessible as possible in terms of like doing Zoom tutorials, talking them through things. My partner drove to Port Mahomick to deliver an iPad to one of our elders so that she could use it, and we sort of talked her through it and we did a practice run. So in that sense, we'll try as much as possible, but also we are losing contact with some elders just because of the nature of the sort of blunt instrument that is sort of digital technology. And it does makes it a really 2D experience, because normally our room is set up cabaret style, small groups, people talking, people mingling. Then we will have a kind of collective action of dancing together, or we might do a quiz, or we might play bingo, or, you know, something like that where we're all working together, but you can still have that exchange. You can't do that on a Zoom platform as naturally or as easily. It becomes too much like a classroom setting if you break people out into spaces. So really it becomes quite performative, hence the glittery curtain. And the as dance practitioners, so myself and two of the other practitioners sort of lead on any of the dance activity. So suddenly it becomes like quite prop heavy or ridiculous, and which is really joyful, but it feels like a different project in lots of ways as well, because the onlineness of it, it just is a different kind of way of engaging with people, and the loss of touch. Not that we touch each other loads, but just that squeezing of an arm, or if we do partner dancing, or like that's something that I've become acutely aware of. And especially for folks who have articulated loneliness and all those kind of things, this, whilst it's great, is also is a blunt instrument when it comes to social spaces, I think. And yes, so there's a bit of a heartache about that in lots of ways.
Thanks very much to Lou Brodie for an absolutely fascinating discussion. And just to say, Lou is an MSc student in Applied Gender Studies at Strathclyde University, along with everything else. A very thought-provoking podcast which touches on the issues of accessing and including older LGBTQI people, whether that's for research or for community projects, what that means and how it's done in times of social distancing, and what that might mean for places such as Scotland and rural Scotland, and across language differences, including for queer Gaels that Lou talks about. It also causes a pause on who and what we're defining as old, as Celia has paused on age as a number and an experience, and what the life course could mean. So invoking the histories that are lived through, and here we hear about Section 28, as well as the futures to come, including digital futures. So thanks to Lou again, thanks to production, that's Amanda Stanley, and thanks to Kim Moore for music.